You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 316 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Gotham City Year 1, Number 3, Poison Ivy, Number 7, Batman and the Joker Deadly Duo, Number 2, John Stewart, The Emerald Knight, Number 1, Batman, Number 130, Dark Crisis, Warzone, Number 1, Titans, Season 4, Episode 6, Brother Blood, and Doom Patrol, Season 4, Episode 2, Butt Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, this week for DC News, we're going to be taking a look at what's coming out for DC in 2023. First up, we have four feature films. Shazam! Fury of the Gods, March 17th, 2023. The Flash, June 16th, 2023. Blue Beetle, August 18th, 2023. And then Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, December 25th, 2023. One of the things we talked about last week was Warner Brothers Discovery running a commercial during the Super Bowl. And they announced that they were going to release the trailer for The Flash during that. When I saw this list, I was thinking, you know what? They have Shazam! Fury of the Gods coming out before that. I'm surprised they're not promoting that more.
I think that's a fair point, Drew. But they've already put out trailers for Shazam! And I don't know that Super Bowl ads are so expensive. I kind of understand films not putting trailers out on that. You could make the other argument that Shazam would benefit from greater eyeballs being on those trailers that have come out, but I don't know. I kind of get it. There's got to be someone in charge at Warner Brothers that is being realistic with themselves, and that knowing that Shazam is just frankly not a destination movie. It's not going to be. Right? I'm not saying it's not going to be good. I'm not going to say that I'm not excited for it. I am personally excited for it, but it's not the same thing as an Avengers film. It's just not. So I can understand maybe foregoing the Super Bowl ad money.
The other thing I thought was weird was the Blue Beetle movie is coming out August 18th. That's after kids go back to school. I thought that was kind of odd. They didn't bump it out into the summertime a little more.
I don't know that Blue Beetle is going to be a true summer flick, though. It's releasing around the time you get some of the, like, more oddball Marvel stuff, right? Like, I feel like August is the time where you get some, like, Ant-Man, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's when those films get released, too.
Yeah, fair enough. So, and then Aquaman.
I just don't know, Drew. I don't know. I think if you put Blue Beetle out in the summer, that it's going to be competing against other big films that it's probably not going to beat.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right about that. Maybe August is a better time for that movie.
I am not in any way meaning to criticize what the film could be. I have no idea. I am very, very hopeful about the Blue Beetle movie, to be clear. I'm very optimistic in that film. I don't know what the big blockbuster films are that are coming out this year for sure, but there's no way it would struggle mightily, Drew, to be able to compete with that, because he's not that well known of a character. He's not a complete unknown, right? But he's definitely a lower tier character, and he's not benefiting from any sort of springboard in the way that Marvel characters do.
That's true. I mean, for some people, they'll be like, Blue Beetle's coming out of the clear blue, wondering who that is.
Yeah, they're like, what is that? Again, I'm really excited for the film, but I do get August kind of makes sense to me. I'm not shocked by that. What is, honestly, though, Drew, what's more wild to me that I do want to mention is the fact that it's coming out before Aquaman. Aquaman's been, I thought, effectively done for like a year now, and it's still coming out after Blue Beetle, which we've heard nothing about other than we've seen the costume, which looks fantastic. Phenomenal.
And then Aquaman, they have that coming out on Christmas.
And we knew that this got bumped back quite a bit, and it's I am still, Drew, I'm a little bit curious to see if that and the Flash really do come out when they're supposed to come out. You know what I mean? Like, they are definitely part of an older regime, and Aquaman in particular seems like there's a non-zero chance that that film doesn't get shelved.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you on that. The Flash, I'm pretty sure that'll probably come out the date they've said, only because they're going to advertise it during the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But I know it's just it's so that film still feels so volatile, Drew. I mean, the Ezra Miller thing, I don't think that that's done. I really don't think that's done. The criticism of casting him has died down for now because Ezra has mercifully stayed out of the news recently. But when he pops back up in the ad, I feel like you're gonna get another surge of a cycle of people being like, hey, remember when not that long ago he was home invading people's houses?
With the trailer coming out, that's probably the time we'll be hearing stuff pop up about it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like it's died down because thankfully he seems to have been helped and he's getting help, which is good. That's good. So we're not hearing anything new. And so obviously everything is what it is. The news is going to die down, but it's going to pop back up. That's going to spark another on Twitter and whatever is going to, oh, Ezra Miller. I don't know. I really think that that film has a huge uphill battle to fight.
Yeah, I agree. Also coming out this year, we have four DC animated movies. We have the Legion of Superheroes, which is supposed to be coming out February 7th, and that's supposed to be on 4K Ultra HD, Blu-ray, and digital. We got Batman: The Doom That Came to Gotham coming out spring 2023. We don't have a confirmed release date yet. We have Justice League versus RWBY Superheroes and Huntsmen Part 1 supposed to be coming out in the springtime also on 4K Ultra HD, Blu-ray, and digital. And then Justice League War World, which is just supposed to be out sometime this year. No confirmed date on that either.
A couple of those are definitely like one of those is an anime spinoff thing, but a couple of them drew like the War World one. I'm wondering because we know DC had this really nice. I personally really much really enjoyed the cohesiveness of the animated universe that they had built, and it kind of built on those characters. And we know that that is no longer the case. That story came to a pretty finite ending, which we reviewed, but. I'm curious if some of these are going to be DC's. Are they going to do a new attempt at that? Are they just going to do standalone films from for the time being? And these are all just, unconnected, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But I'm going to be kind of curious with a couple, with specifically the War World one, to see if that's going to be an attempt to do a new connected animated universe.
I'm not sure about that because I think all these were announced before James Gunn and Peter Safran came on at Warner Discovery. So they might not be launching their stuff until after these movies.
Well, I don't know how much James Gunn has to do with the animated stuff anyway, though. That decision, Drew, predates those two guys. They're
Yeah.
not the one we that what when did Apocalypse come out? It was like at the beginning of last year, right?
I think so.
That I mean, so that's I think that predates even the Discovery merger, I think, maybe. It's pretty close. Like this seems to have, that seemed at the time at least to just be a true creative decision to end that, which made sense, right? Because it was the animated universe was heavily based on the New 52. It was taking a lot of its design cues from that. A lot of the storylines, especially the Justice League ones, were based around that. And obviously, the New 52 is done, is very done now. And so they decided to move on and update. It's possible that those two have their fingers in it, but I wouldn't be shocked if they don't. Can you imagine if Gunn is trying to design and control the live action stuff and also the unconnected animated stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not touching that.
So I don't know. I don't know how much connectivity they want between all of them. So I'm still waiting for their big plan to be released to the public.
Again, I have no expectation that these animated things are connected to any of the live action stuff. I'm just talking in connection to themselves in their own animated world, like what we had before. I don't know. I don't know that, like DC said that, we saw them end their, the one that they had going, and I'm curious because they clearly aren't done making animated films. DC clearly, the one good thing that they have on Marvel is that they produce these very, high quality animated films, so they're not moving away from them. Are they going to all just be standalone for now, or are they going to try to tell new connected stories? That's going to be within themselves. I have no expectation that those are supposed to be connected to anything else.
I guess that just remains to be seen. Also coming out this year, we got our DC television shows. We got The Flash Season 9 premiering on February 8th, Superman and Lois Season 3 on March 14th, Gotham Knights Season 1 on March 14th. We have Titans Season 4 Part 2. Who knows when it's coming out? Hasn't been announced. We got Doom Patrol Season 4 Part 2. 'Cause I don't know what HBO Max is doing because I'm watching Titans for this episode, right? I get to the end of it and it acts like it's the end of the show. I'm like, what? I get online and look, they're on hiatus. They're not coming. They haven't announced when they're coming back. The whole season's been shot. I know it's done. What is the deal with having a break? Are they planning?
Oh, that is not good. I just thought we had somehow randomly caught up to the release schedule because I had the same thing. I was like, wait, I'm shocked that we've caught up episode-wise because I knew that we started several weeks behind. So that threw me off guard because it's not like we've been blazing through our schedule. Yeah, that's concerning. And like you said, they filmed it. Oh boy.
The one thing I thought of was it's possible they're like, let's show half the season and then premiere the second half on our new streaming service. That's the only thing I could think of. But what's weird is they're doing the same thing with Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol's only doing half also?
Yep.
Oh. Why would they? Drew, HBO Max, I feel like, did a pretty solid job establishing itself as a streaming service pretty quickly. I feel like it managed to vault itself up there surprisingly well. I think that was something that we were kind of curious to see what would happen. Would it sink or float? I feel like it's been pretty successful, don't you? Generally speaking. That's a
I thought
lot
it
of
was.
people use HBO Max.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that use HBO Max too. I thought it was pretty successful. I mean, it helps that HBO was its own channel before it turned into a
Right.
streaming service. So
Oh, yeah.
it had a lot of people come over from, having the channel just to start using the streaming service. Which I think is nice to have the streaming service because you basically have HBO on demand. You know
You
what I
do.
mean?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
But we know it's coming to an end sometime too. We've seen, the shows dropping off from it. And we know that they're supposed to be launching their new streaming service this spring.
This
So
Discovery mergers has been an unmitigated disaster.
hey, won't get any argument with me on that.
The Discovery streaming service, I'm sure, is a total, like, who's like, oh, you know what I really need to watch is more Discovery Channel. That's the one that needs the saving, not, oh, God.
What I've heard is they're supposed to be merging the two into one streaming service.
Sure, merge it into HBO Max. Take all of your stuff from Discovery and put it on the established name that you've established. You've got people to buy it, Drew. That's wild to me. Like, imagine Netflix acquire. It would not happen, right? But let's just pretend. In a world where Netflix acquires Hulu, like they would just add Hulu into it, right? Like you wouldn't release a new streaming service.
With an unknown name that nobody knows.
Yeah. Oh, God. Good Lord.
Crazy. So we're going to have Titans Season 4 and Doom Patrol Season 4 with their back halves. We don't know when they're coming out. We also know from last week's DC News, Harley Quinn Season 4 is supposed to be coming out this year. And we have Peacemaker that's been renewed for a second season. So Peacemaker has been renewed for a second season, and there's a chance it could return this year, but most likely it's going to be 2024 for that. And that's probably the same with Netflix's The Sandman, as it's been renewed for a second season too, but it's highly unlikely it'd be out in 2023. And as far as I know, that's all the DC shows there are right now.
That's all I'm blanking on, some if there's something I'm not thinking of.
Yeah, we used to have a lot more DC shows, and now it's slimmed down, so.
Yeah, but a lot of that has to do with Arrowverse closing down. I mean, that had a large share of shows.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not terribly upset with the end of the Arrowverse. So.
No, I think its time has come.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hey, hey, we're Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
Almost 12 years old, Davy Jones was it for me.
I was having problems dancing and tambourining. I got overzealous and overly excited.
Like, we've had our own little version of Monkey Mania 50 years later, which is just crazy.
Be sure to like and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and monkeyingaround.com.
The ESO Network is proud to announce that our official charity this year is Pops for Patients, a toy donation cause that collects, donates, and distributes Funko Pop figures to children's hospitals all year round. They have donated tens of thousands of Pops since they started in August of 2016. That's a lot of much-needed smiles to sick kids across the country. For more information on how you can help contribute, go to popsforpatients.org.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
Spoilers!
Spoilers! We got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. We got spoilers,
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 spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you,
for you.
All right, let's talk Gotham City, Year One, Number 3. In the past, Slam Bradley assaults an officer for using excessive force during an interrogation. The officer shot the suspect in the hand, stating it was a lie detector test. Slam Bradley brings an unconscious Mr. Wayne home after the exchange went bad. The kid was supposed to be left near the Wayne's grave, but there was no kid. Slam goes home and tries to get some sleep, but keeps seeing the kid when he closes his eyes. The next morning, Slam gets to his office early. Instead of the cops, Mrs. Wayne shows up. Mr. Wayne was angry and took his anger out on his wife. Mrs. Wayne was able to convince Mr. Wayne that Slam was not the kidnapper. After the encounter last night, Mrs. Wayne does not believe Helen is alive. Mrs. Wayne pays Slam $10,000 to find her daughter's killer before they get too far with the loot. Slam searches for Sue, the go-between who had the money. Slam learns that her name is Queenie Lindell, and she was a dancer who worked out of Gin and Jive, and she left a few months back. She also used to do domestic work for Miriam's Cleaners. Slam goes to Madame Shirley, his mother, for an address on Queenie Lindell. Slam's mother called...
I don't think that's really his mom.
What's that?
I'm pretty sure that's not actually his mom.
Oh, they had me convinced that it was.
He was calling her Ma, but I think that was a term of endearment. Like, she acts like his aunt. I was very much under the impression that was not really his mom.
Okay. The comic had me convinced it was his mother. I was like, wow, that's his mother? And then, you know, they kept going with it, so I was like...
I could be wrong.
But... So, I mean, I could be wrong, too, so... Honestly, I don't think the story's going to come back to it either.
don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, it could go either way. Because they could explain the... I don't know. You could explain why... Because she was... I'm pretty sure she was black. And you could explain why he was more sympathetic than his other peers in the police department. Because, you know... He himself is not acting. He may just be passing as white. I don't. You know what I mean? I don't know. I was strongly under the impression that that was a, you know, a term of endearment. Maybe not really his mom. Maybe she helped raise him like it was. She was his mom, kind of like Big Mama and Fox and the Hound.
That's possible. So we'll see if it. We'll see if the story.
I would be shocked if that circles back somehow, Drew.
Yeah, that's possible. That's very possible. Because we seem to have a correlation with Slam's talking. We know Slam is talking to Bruce in the present. He's actually, I think he's actually telling him the story. So
my gut tells me, if anything, she raised him. I really don't think it's really his mom. But it's possible that she, in some way, she helped raise him, though, Drew, because there's the time where he goes, when he's going on his mission to question about the messenger gal and who's trying to figure out who she is and where she lives. One of the, it was like a bar patron or, you know, some, one of the business owners realized that she said, "You aren't slumming it. You're from," like, he, you know what I mean? Like, he lived that world. And so, you know what I mean? Like, there was a kind of a hint there that maybe he grew up in that area, too.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was just a money thing, because he kept paying her more money.
Well, but she said, "You feel good, like, you feel like you're, like, the, essentially like a knight in shining armor coming down to us low peons over here, and does that make you feel good?" And then she realizes that that's not, he's not Bruce Wayne coming down to the slums, right?
Right.
She realizes, oh, no. You're here because this is where, like, these are your people, in a sense.
Oh, yeah. Which, yeah, that could definitely tie back onto if she, you know, if he was her mother or she raised him or whatever. So,
yeah.
Good point. All right, let me get back to the...
Sorry.
Hey, sometimes we need to stop and discuss these things, so... All right, let me get back to the recap. Slam's mother calls him with an address for James Lindell. His niece Queenie has been staying with him. When James answers the door and Slam hears a baby crying, Slam rams through the door. James starts firing a shotgun at him as he runs up the stairs. Slam hurdles over the railing and then takes out James. Slam is disappointed to find that the baby is not Helen. When Slam looks out the window at the backyard, Slam spies a shovel in a freshly dug spot in the yard. Slam grabs the shovel and digs up the spot. Slam finds Helen's dead body. To be continued. That last scene's not a freaking tug on your heart. Jeez.
I know. What a brutal ending. But to King's credit, I feel like he does a lot in the comic to prepare you that that's what's going to happen at the end of the comic.
Oh, yeah. Especially with Mrs. Wayne, you know, her gut feeling telling her that Helen's gone. I mean, that's a clear indication right there.
And very realistic. Like, she kind of, and to be fair, it was hinted at last issue that Slam doesn't want to admit it to himself. And she kind of says that this issue, but Slam figures out last issue when they're in the graveyard. He's like, wait, this is essentially, he's like, this is all BS because she's already dead. He doesn't say that because I think he doesn't want it to be true. Right. And then we see him struggling with, even before Mrs. Wayne comes to talk to him, we see him struggling at night because I think deep down he knows that she's dead. And then the worst part is that King gives you that glimmer of hope that maybe the baby really is there. And of course it's not. And just brutal, but phenomenal writing.
Yeah. Great writing. Oh, man. I honestly don't know where Slam's going to go from here to track down these people. At this point, we have no freaking clue. I mean, he might be able to get something out of Queenie, but that's going to lead him on for the rest of his investigation. But we don't know anything on who's behind this.
I have a strong feeling, Drew, we may know who's behind it. Or, like, not know the answer, but we already know the person. I feel like we've probably seen them.
I have a feeling you're right.
That's tough, man. I love this story, but it has been a brutal story. It's and you know it's going to be that. No point has this story struck me as going to be a happy ending story. Like, the story has so openly been like, things did not go well. This was a very bad moment that Slam personally seems to be convinced is directly correlated to the downfall of Gotham. So, like, you know it's going to be a bad story. And yet King just pulls you in like, hey, man, enjoy the mystery. Oh, by the way, here's a gut punch.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Poison Ivy number 7. Parson, Montana, home of future gas. Ivy came here to punish a super polluter. Upon investigating, Ivy is surprised to find one of Woodrue's plant monsters is still alive. There are mysteries here Ivy didn't anticipate. Ivy talks to some of the locals and discovers that they have seen the plant monsters wandering through town at least once a week since Future Gas started putting up their new extraction equipment. It's destroying their crops, but the locals don't want Ivy saying anything because now they have medical and life insurance. Ivy gets a job working for Future Gas. She takes Ms. Crawley some flowers from the gardens outside. Inside her office, Ivy begins snooping around. Ms. Crawley comes back into the office and knows she's Poison Ivy. Ivy attacks Ms. Crawley, but Ms. Crawley sprays Ivy with a gas that neutralizes her powers. Ms. Crawley reveals she was once an assistant professor to Jason Woodrue. Without her powers, Ivy cannot fight off the Lamia spores coursing through her body.
Drew, I'm very curious at the teaser at the end of the issue was out-of-body experience. Is she going to somehow transfer her consciousness into the poor assistant that just walked into the room?
I don't know. I got no indication about that.
That's just, well, no, because that was the, like, you know, like how they'll do, like, the little title teasers for what's coming next? That was what they, that was the title, was out-of-body experience. And I was like, is... The only thing that made sense, Drew, to make that story make sense was like she needed some sort of miracle, and that's when an assistant walks into the room. I'm like, wait, is she going to like float a mushroom over to her?
That'd be weird. But when I saw that, I just figured she was going to be in some sort of dream state next comic or something.
I mean, that could be true, too. I'm pure speculation, Drew, just because that title caught my eye, and I was like, what does that mean? Drew, this was a great start to this story arc, and again, I can see why DC ordered more of this, because it's really good. I feel like they have a clear vision of what to do next with this story, which is always good, because sometimes, you know, you can get like a 6 issues, and it's really good, and they're like, hey, do some more, and then it feels a little aimless because the writer wasn't expecting to do more with the story. This felt pretty focused to me. This felt like a very clear vision of what this arc is.
I agree with you. I thought the same thing too when I read it, so I was excited about that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman and the Joker, Deadly Duo number 2. Jim Gordon has been captured. He is being slowly cut up. Joker does not know where he is, so Batman can't beat the information out of him. Batman must help Joker if he is to save Jim. Batman finds a phone on Joker. Joker states that some guy delivered it to him and stated he is supposed to get messages telling him what to do. Batman and the Joker are attacked by multiple Joker monsters. Batman tries calling in drones, but they can't extinguish between the real Joker and the Joker monsters. Joker gets dragged off the roof, but gets his shoulder bitten by one of the Joker monsters. Batman decides to follow Joker off the roof. Using his bat rope and grapple, Batman gets them to safety, and they escape in the Batmobile. Bruce wakes up in the Batcave in a hospital bed with Alfred and Dick standing over him. Alfred informs Master Bruce that he has been unconscious for 14 hours, most of it with a high fever. Alfred had to remove a tooth embedded in Bruce's shoulder. The tooth has been put in a cold storage solution for Bruce to look at later. After investigating the tooth, Bruce and Dick discover that someone has created synthetic DNA and figured out how to combine it with normal DNA to create an entirely different organism. While Dick Grayson chairs a meeting in Mr. Wayne's stead, Batman meets with Detective Bullock. Bullock shows Batman that they have received a finger from the Joker. Batman informs Bullock that the finger belongs to Jim Gordon. Joker's phone receives a text to meet at the Wayne recycling plant north of Gotham at midnight. A second text states, "Hello, Batman. What a pleasant surprise. Please come in." Inside the recycling plant, Batman discovers that William, Lisa, and their son Thomas Gray have all been captured. One of them is going to die tonight, and the Joker is supposed to decide. Batman takes the Joker's place and has 15 minutes to decide. Back at the Batcave, Dick Grayson is taking a nap. Suddenly, an alarm goes off. The tooth they had in storage seems to be replicating. To be continued.
I am intrigued, Drew, to see where the story goes, but this still is just not my cup of tea as a comic. I totally get why a lot of people would really like this comic and be excited about it, but it's just not, it's not for me.
And I'm one of the people that are excited about it. It feels really old school 90s to me.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why I do like this comic is Batman feels like he's in... It feels like a happier Batman to me. I don't know if you understand what I mean by that. It doesn't feel so... I don't know. Batman doesn't feel so dark in this to me.
I guess.
The story itself is a darker story, but I don't know. Batman doesn't feel so dark himself. At least I didn't think so.
That's fair. I can't disagree with that, but I also... I don't know. I feel like we haven't seen Batman do a whole lot other than interact with Joker and these Joker monsters. So it's tough. It's tough for me to say. I will agree, Drew. I do not think this is a grimdark Batman himself, personally. I totally agree on the characterization. But we've not, I don't know, we've really only seen him deal with this singular case in this, which I know is most Batman stories. I understand that, but I don't know. I don't know that I've seen enough of this Batman to fully characterize him one way or the other. But I do agree. I don't think he's not, a super gritty, dark Batman. I completely agree with you.
I don't know. I just really like the story a lot. I like the fact that Dick Grayson's involved. I like Batman's interactions with Detective Bullock. They seem to be... Sometimes Bullock is portrayed different than he's been portrayed in this. And I like the kind of more of a partnership they have going on here, working together. I don't know. I just really like the story, so... All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. John Stewart, The Emerald Knight, number one. Planet Ektos, Dark Sector 4. 2 years later, a gate is open. Esoc's army attacks. John Stewart and the Green Lanterns defend the planet. The Green Lanterns notice that something is wrong with the gate. It is emitting epic amounts of power and is spiking fast. The planet explodes. City Sphere, Marzell, Dark Sector 4. John Stewart created this city when Ektos exploded. The Lanterns seem to be trapped there. Lonar, the god of journey and pathways, makes an appearance. Lonar tells John that Esak is unhappy with how the new gods have evolved and is trying to make his own. Esak is not currently the god of anything yet. He has power without consequence. Lonar tells John that if Esak is able to make even one of the Neo gods, it will splinter reality at its foundation, and the universe will come down like a house of cards. Lonar also informs John that Esak's world that he pulled out of hypertime is Zanshi. Planet Zanshi, Dark Sector 4. John Stewart and the Green Lanterns boom tube in with the help of Lonar and attack his army. John meets with Esak. John Stewart has split himself into two beings. Esak tells John that this is what he is trying to do. Zanshi is returned. So is John's wife, Katma Two. She's out there somewhere waiting for John to find her. John asks Esak what he is the god of. Esak answers he is the god of nostalgia, and just like that, Esak is transformed. He has great cosmic power, but now he is restricted like Lonar. Esak leaves defeated. One of the John Stewarts goes home, taking some of the Green Lanterns with him. The other John Stewart stays with the other Green Lanterns to clean things up there. The John Stewart who stayed in the Dark Sector's first task is to find his wife. End of chapter one.
Drew, I am so bleeping sick of these stories that are like, change is good. You got to embrace change in comics. Comics are evolving. And they're saying that in, like, you know, in loose terms, like, oh, the new gods are evolving. The comics evolve, and so the characters have to evolve with the times in the comics. I get it. We all get it. We all get it. Holy cow. Oh, my God. I, like, Drew, for the love of God, please just tell your damn story.
And please tell a better story, because I hate this story.
Well, what is the story? If you take out the very blunt, again, this is like the 10th one we've read in the past year. That's like, hey, if you don't like change in comics, you're a bad person. Okay, fine, okay. You've made your point, Drew. They've made their point.
A point they don't even—a point they don't even need to make, Cletus, because comics have been evolving since the Golden Age.
I know. Well, and in case you didn't know that, all of these comics individually have told you that. In case you didn't get that, you've now have multiple comics reiterating the point that comics evolve. Oh my God, I get it. You know what people? You know, this is the thing. Drew, I agree. Comics should evolve, and characters should, they naturally, like you said, they naturally evolve over storytelling. Even if somehow magically you capsule seal time and place, those characters are still going to change in some ways because you're telling ongoing stories. It's the nature of storytelling. I agree 100% with their point. But you know, the great way to piss people off who maybe don't agree with that, constantly making your story about yelling at them. What are you accomplishing with that, Drew? What do you accomplish with that? You're lecturing at people that, let's be completely honest, aren't reading your comic. The people that are really upset about these massive changes with these characters, like Jonathan Kent being having a boyfriend, or even just being a character in the first place. Tim Drake having a boyfriend. All of these other changes that are, we've got, you know, Joe as a Green Lantern and all of these other things. The people that are really, truly upset about that, Drew, aren't reading the comics that you're writing, telling them that they shouldn't be upset. They're not. They're not the ones buying it. The people buying those comics are the ones that don't care and are okay with that status quo because they still want to spend money to buy your comic. You're preaching to the wrong crowd.
Very true.
it's just so frustrating because this story, I do not like this Jon Stewart story that they're telling. I don't like the art style that it is. You know, it's the same artist that we had prior to Dark Crisis. I don't like it. It feels very convoluted as to what are the Green Lanterns right now, Drew? They feel like they're John's personal army is what they feel like at the moment, which is odd to me. I want to be clear. I am very cool with John having his own book and John being a lead character for Green Lantern. A-okay with it. It's this specific story I just don't care for. But you know what I would prefer is if they just tell the damn story instead of having it be about, well, if you don't like, if you're mad that Jon Stewart is changing, then you don't like comics because comics always change and Jon Stewart has always changed his status quo. I'm like, yeah, okay, I agree with that. Why don't you just tell the story instead of lecturing people? Because again, the people that have actually bought this comic and read this comic clearly don't care that you've changed his status quo, or more likely like that you've changed his status quo. And that's why they paid money to read your story. You are preaching to the wrong people.
Me, I'm ready for some regular Green Lantern stories. I don't know about you.
I am so... That's the thing, Drew. Like, I would be very, very interested in Jon Stewart as the lead character, but doing, like, what we generally think of as Green Lantern stories, where he's patrolling a sector. And again, I understand, you know, comics change and evolve, and that's fine. I feel like you can do new stories with John as the lead character. I don't know that we've had tons of Green Lantern stories like that with John, if I'm being completely honest with you. I feel like most of the time, if you get what we would consider to be your standard Green Lantern story, it's usually Hal, right?
Right.
I feel like anytime you get something more off the beaten path, it tends to be John. I feel like they tend to, they've done some weird, like, this is not the first time they've done some weird stuff with John. I would almost be a little bit frustrated with that, I think. I'd be like, well, what, you know, what if I just like John as my, like, what if John's my favorite Green Lantern and I just want to read him as a Green Lantern, you know, just being the main character? I feel like you don't get that a lot. I'm not saying it's never happened. I don't mean that. But, like, I feel like more often than not, if you're reading a John Stewart-led book, they're not doing a normal Green Lantern story. They're doing something weird, as they are doing with this story. I just, it's just Green Lantern, as, and it's really, it's frustration at with the Green Lantern IP as a whole, Drew. I'm just so frustrated since, you know, and I know that the stories are going to move on and change after John's leaves. I get that. But he had built up such an interesting world, and it felt like this cosmic space opera where you had these warring cores and, the you know, these different, you know, forces attempting to police the universe. And we've just gone completely off the deep end where I can't remember the, like, the closest thing we've had to, I feel like, a standard Green Lantern story is Grant Morrison's run with Hal, and that was weird as hell. It was technically him just being a Green Lantern, right? But it was Grant Morrison doing it, so it was weird.
To say the least. Yeah, I can't recall the last time we had a normal Green Lantern
Maybe
story.
Maybe when it was when we had the book, the Green Lanterns book with Jessica and Baz were partners.
Oh, yeah. On Earth. Yeah, that was back in Rebirth.
That might be the last time I can think of where it felt like a normal, like that was two Green Lanterns on patrol, right? And they did different things with it. That wasn't, I didn't feel like they were retreading old ground with that story. That's the thing that frustrates me, Drew, is like you can have a story feel familiar while not doing something old. Like you can do a new story while still having it in a familiar setting. And I feel like the point that this author was making is like, well, if it's going to change, it's going to change a ton. And if you don't like it changing 100%, then get used to it. Tough cookies, buddy. It's like, look, I'm good with the story changing. That's fine. But like, it is okay for people to like a version of a character too.
Yeah. I remember back in the early 90s when Hal Jordan went kind of crazy and they got rid of the Green Lantern Corps and went down to one Green Lantern. We had Kyle Rayner, and that was a big change.
Long time, that lasted quite a while.
Yeah, it sure did. But you know, eventually went back, and then
right,
you know,
John's took over.
Yeah, and we got that's probably one of the greatest runs of Green Lantern ever. So,
and that's a pretty. I mean, and that Kyle again. I want to be very clear. I am not complaining that they're doing something different with Green Lantern. I don't particularly like it, but I get it. Sure, do it. But just tell your story. Tell your story. If people are buying your book, they've already bought in. They've literally bought into the story that you are telling. Just tell your story. The people that you're lecturing to aren't reading your comic.
Now, this said end chapter one, so they're going to continue John Stewart's story at some point. Me personally, I don't have any interest in that. And following John Stewart's new story. I'm interested in getting back to regular Green Lantern stories, which I'm hoping we're going to be getting after Planet Lazarus Planet, whatever it's called, because they announced a new Green Lantern title coming sometime this year. So that's what I'm looking forward to see what they do with that.
I would be cool, Drew, if they did the John Stewart New God thing, in addition to having an actual core, I would be much more interested than, because right now, the only thing we've really had since they essentially killed the core a year or two at most ago, is this rogue John Stewart army. And that's just, it's fine if that's a flavor, right? But it's the only thing on the menu right now. And that's really, I want, like, you can give me that, but also give me some normal Green Lantern too, please. And it can be, and that, and the normal Green Lantern can be Jon Stewart. I just want to be clear. It can be him. Just give me a taste of both.
Well, now, apparently there's two Jon Stewarts, because it's possible we could get both.
Oh, good Lord. That was so, the comic by the end, Drew, that was such a weird, they're like, oh, it's a Typer time is this thing, which was, I felt like a very different interpretation. That felt like a very different interpretation of Hyper Time than what I feel like it's normally been established as. And it felt like, it basically felt like we're just going to do something silly and then say Hyper Time, as if that explains what just happened.
I agree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman, number 130. Batman is trapped in space with 0.4% oxygen left. Using compressed air from his grappling gun, Batman propels himself to one of the damaged Justice League ships. Batman salvages an undamaged oxygen tank, which contains 12 hours and 17 minutes. Next, Batman salvages a booster and uses it to head to Earth. Batman lands near the Fortress of Solitude. He has not time to rest because Failsafe is coming. Inside the fortress, Robin Tim Drake is helping Superman with his solar treatment. Batman comes inside and asks Superman to buy him some time so he can end this once and for all. Superman battles Failsafe. Failsafe hits a Kryptonian pressure point and Superman uncontrollably uses his heat vision, destroying the helmet and his containment suit. Failsafe defeats Superman. Batman and Robin come out into the snow to confront Failsafe, who is dragging Superman towards the fortress. The dynamic duo fights Failsafe together. Batman is able to use nanobots to change Failsafe's programming to allow him compassion. The programming doesn't work, and Failsafe kills Batman by disintegrating him. Failsafe program ends, and he returns to the Batcave.
But we get the teaser at the end, Drew, that it seems that he wasn't disintegrated, that he got, like, teleported somewhere.
Okay, I don't remember that. I just remember him disappearing, and I'm like, okay.
There's the very last panel is Bruce in some other room, clearly, like, toasted by whatever the ray was, but very much intact and not a pile of ash.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that because I didn't remember that. But I trust you. I knew he wasn't dead, so you're not going to kill off Batman. But making Failsafe think that he killed Batman is definitely the way to go.
Well, what was interesting, Drew, so when he gets vaporized, I was like, oh, I wonder if that was Bruce's plan ultimately, was to make Failsafe think he killed Bruce and therefore have completed his protocol. But obviously, in fact, not do it. But I was left wondering from the last panel if whatever Bruce got hit with was what he was supposed to have gotten hit with. Like, it wasn't actually designed to kill him in the first place. That it sort of somehow imprisoned him or something. Like, whatever the backup Batman built this to take out Batman, that he didn't design it to actually kill Bruce.
Oh. That makes sense. And just entrap him, huh?
I don't know. We obviously, we're not going to really know, I don't think, until next issue. I'm really curious. I don't know. I don't know whether whatever happened was Bruce being saved by the last minute and he was supposed to die from that shot. But I think there's a really strong chance that whatever he got hit with was designed intentionally. Like, whatever Failsafe used was what he was supposed to use.
I got to tell you one thing. I really had to suspend my disbelief about Batman coming back.
Oh, my God. I admire Zdarsky. He tried so hard to explain it logically. Like, he's using his grappling gun, the pressure in his grappling gun, to shoot him that direction. And he got oxygen from this. And his suit is fireproof so it can withstand falling through the atmosphere and all of that. But I was like, come on, man. Like, he tried really, really hard to explain it. And I was just like, dude, the only explanation, like, let's all be real for a second. The explanation for how did he survive a fall from the moon? He's Batman. Come on. Come on.
I would have been better for him just to find some sort of ship or life support thing he could get inside and fall back to Earth or something than what Zdarsky did.
Yeah. I thought Zdarsky did a good job trying to explain it, right? Like, I don't feel like he just... I don't know if it would have worked better or worse, Drew, but he could have very easily just been like, he survived it because Batman, and left it at that. And in some way, that might have worked better, because in attempting to actually explain it, it just highlighted how silly it was. Because the whole time you're like, dude, come on. Like, I get it, but come on. I admired it for trying. Like, at the same time, Drew, I can't totally blame him, right? Like, what's a wild Batman story to do? Batman falls from the moon and survives. Why? Because he's Batman. Like, I don't totally blame him for going there, right? Like, why not try it? Why not try it? If it works, you know, this is the thing, Drew. Like, it's super silly when you read it, but in a couple years, all that people are going to remember is that Bruce fell from the moon and survived. And that's going to get brought up in future stories. And that's going to be a thing, like, when people are, like, you know, are talking about Batman, like, yeah, one time in an issue he fell from the moon, right? Like, the story itself is quite silly, but I feel like there's a potential for a legitimate legacy of that moment.
Yeah, I could see that.
And look, and let's just point out here again, I know it's a, you know, it's not this huge major status quo change, but that's a new story. How many times have we seen Bruce fall from the moon? We haven't. Did Zdarsky spend any time lecturing us whether we had a problem with that or not?
Nope. No. He just did it.
He just did it. Like, just tell your story. Just tell your story. And if people like it, they'll buy your comic. Like, just tell the story. I quite like this arc for the most part, Drew. I'm very curious to see what is happening next issue. Obviously, we know Bruce is alive in some fashion. I'm really curious to see, you know, what's going on. I admire Zdarsky. He took some really big swings, I thought, in this first arc, most notably the moonfall. I like it, Drew. I like that he's being bold. He's not playing... I don't feel like he's playing it safe. I feel like he's telling some... Like, they feel like Batman stories, but he has taken some big swings, and I admire that. I'd rather you do that.
We also had the backup story. The Batman of Zur and Ar is in control and throws Joker out of a window. Batman fights back control and saves the Joker. Batman reprograms Zur and Ar to make sure the protocol shares Batman's lines. Batman then changes his costume, adding the yellow oval behind his bat to remind him that there is something lurking behind the bat. Which is, I thought it was a kind of a cool interpretation of why he would change his costume.
I really liked the conclusion to this story, Drew. I especially liked the panel where you've got the blood kind of coming out of Batman Zurinar's face, where he's talking about, like, the killing stops when the criminals start fearing you. Like, the risk of getting killed by Batman outweighs the risk of doing the crime. I was like, because you, like, that's an approach we've seen some heroes take, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
The killing stops when the crime stops. I like that. I like that you saw, like, that's what Batman could do, and he actively chooses not to do that. Really good. I thought this... I know we were a little iffy on the story at certain parts, but I feel like these three backup issues, I feel like they tied together to make a really good story. Like, I would reread that backup story again.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week. Dark Crisis, Warzone number 1. I was surprised we had several different stories in this. I guess I didn't really know what to expect from it. First one we had was called On Time. A battle is going on at the Hall of Justice. Iris throws her phone at a giant gorilla. When the gorilla goes to pound Iris, Linda saves her. Linda and Iris have a conversation, catching up with each other in the middle of the battle, and then Iris and Linda team up to save some kids caught in the battle. The second story was called Just When I Thought I Was Out. The Spectre is out of control and fighting against the heroes. When Spectre is about to kill Raven, Jim Corrigan returns from his vacation and bonds with the Spectre. Jim is able to stop Spectre from killing Raven. The end? With a question mark. We also had Amazon Helping Hand. At the Library of Themyscira, Cleo is the historian and record keeper for Themyscira. With Medusa's help, Cleo is recording a record of the crisis event. Elsewhere on the island, the Amazons keep at the ready to fight evil. Andromeda and Xena go through the portal to Man's World to offer their help. At the Hall of Justice, Queen Nubia, Wonder Woman, and Yara Flor have joined the other heroes in the battle against the Dark Army. Akahim, the home of the Esquisita, Anahai has a vision, seeing the absolute death and destruction coming at the hands of Deathstroke and his army of madness. The next story we had was called Make Our Confessions Long, because when we pray, we keep it short. Guy Gardner convinces Joe Mullen that the Lanterns need to hold the line. Joe rallies the Lanterns. The Green Lanterns are able to hold the line until the Dark Army retreats. End. And then the last story we had in this was called Birds of a Feather. Damian, Red Arrow, Power Girl, Dr. Light, and Sideways are fighting against the Dark Army. Damian saves Red Arrow from getting killed. Damian tells the new girl to go wait in the bus. Ragdoll is on the bus and almost kills Red Canary from behind. Ragdoll is tackled by Black Canary, and Black Canary and Red Canary bond and then join the fight together. Red Canary also meets Batgirl Stephanie Brown. The war concludes in Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths number 7. Now, after me recapping all these stories, you can tell you don't need to really read this.
No, I cannot recommend this to really anybody other than someone who is all in on Dark Crisis. And if you are, go ahead and read it. But I mean, that is genuinely the only reason to read this, is if you want to read every last drop of Dark Crisis, pick up this book. But otherwise, it is completely meaningless. The only thing of interest, the only little nugget I got out of this personally for me, Drew, was that it seemed like maybe DC was wanting to do some Jim Corrigan Spectre stories.
Sure. Why not? I didn't even know Jim Corrigan and the Spectre were separated, so.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the only little nugget I got out, was that they seem to be making it really clear that Jim Corrigan was bonded to the Spectre again, and that there was maybe a story to be told by some writer. Maybe that creative team was, you know, I don't know. Like, maybe that creative team is intending to go on and do a miniseries with him. I don't know. That was literally the only thing that, like, even was a blip on the radar of, it was like, okay, maybe they're doing something with that. That could be interesting. But otherwise, I mean, yeah, it's a comic, I guess. If you really, like, if you love reading every single DC thing, pick it up, I guess. But save your money, man. It's just, that's all I can say.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our DC television shows.
You know what now is a great time for?
A promo for Soul Forge Podcast.
We talk about love.
Loss.
Tattoos.
Sex.
Dating.
Stupid things we do for love.
Pop culture.
Mental health.
We've had author interviews.
Adventures.
And shenanigans.
What?
Soul Forge Podcast.
Where?
We're everywhere.
Soul Forge Podcast. Subscribe today.
Forge your soul.
It's time for a promo for the Epsilon 3 podcast.
The Epsilon 3? What do we talk about?
It's a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast.
Babylon 5? What's that?
It's the greatest 1990s sci-fi show in history.
How are we going to watch it?
With glee and excitement.
How would we rate those kind of episodes?
Out of jump gates.
How many jump gates?
Out of 5 jump gates.
Because it's Babylon 5.
That is correct. If you go to Zahadum, you will die. But you know what you won't do? You won't die listening to the Epsilon 3 podcast right here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Titans, Season 4, Episode 6, Brother Blood. Sebastian is transitioning. The process started when he said the three words. Now he must drink from the well of blood and submerge his body in to gain peace. Until he does that, his misery will only grow. Sebastian refuses, stating he only came with Mother Mayhem to stop her from killing his friends. Connor shaves his head using a piece of mirror and his heat vision. Connor's plan is to kill both Mother Mayhem and Sebastian and then go have a cold one. Connor points out that since Bruce bashed in the head of the Joker, he hasn't killed anyone. Connor's next idea is to use Luther Corp satellites to shine sunlight on the moon so that it won't be blood red. No blood moon, no ritual. Jinx casts a spell to help Raven find her powers. Gar keeps having visions. A strange man walks up to Gar and tells him the animals also see. Gar will also see like Buddy Baker and Mary McCabe. He must look. When the tower splits in half, go to the red. Connor learns that someone tried to hack their Luther Corp satellites from the North Metro Quadrant, just off of State Road 19 near Hynek Lake, the Fire Creek Dam. Connor finds Mother Mayhem and tries to kill her with his heat vision. Mother Mayhem uses her magic to capture him. With Connor captured, the Titans cannot use their plan to teleport Sebastian from the temple. Instead, the Titans suit up and head to the temple. When the Blood Moon is almost back, Sebastian says the words, Azerath, Metreon, Synthos. Just as Sebastian is about to drink the blood, Gar shows up as a giant green gorilla. The Titans battle the followers. Beast Boy breaks the jewel containing Raven's soul self. When her soul self returns to her body, Raven's costume is all white instead of black. Jinx takes on Mother Mayhem and tries to free her. Jinx is stabbed in the stomach by Mother Mayhem's staff. Both Starfire and Raven attack Mother Mayhem. Rachel calls out Sebastian, but he has decided to stay. Sebastian states he is so tired of being nothing. Sebastian drinks the blood. Sebastian screams and the Titans disappear. Gar was able to escape into the red. Mother Mayhem watches as Sebastian emerges himself into the pool. The ritual is complete.
Overall, Drew, I really liked this episode. This was a very strong episode of Titans. The only, qualification I want to put on that is the Connor storyline was very dumb.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one that disliked that.
You can't go 0 to 60 on that, Drew. We've seen him be like the nicest Connor Kent, right? Like this entire show, it's been a very the least moody Connor Kent I think I've seen in any version. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
And they go, you can't go 0 to 60. You can't have him be the almost pure Superman Connor Kent the whole time, and then all of a sudden, out of frankly nowhere, he just flips the switch and goes Lex mode. And the episode tries, I think they're trying to say that it's a defense mechanism, that he's dealing with the trauma of puking multiple snakes. Fair. I get that. But I feel like you have to do more to explain that, because it's just like a switch gets flipped for no reason. And it's silly. It's silly because he's being Lex Luthor, right? He shaves his head so he looks like a skinhead Superman. He's got the tough leather jacket and he's acting all macho. But the show's playing it. See, the show's asking you to take all of that seriously, right? I didn't feel like that was tongue in cheek, but it was objectively ridiculous. And I think that was the thing. I thought on the other hand, Drew, last week with the Beast Boy turning himself into bacteria, that's also very silly, but I thought that the show understood that to a certain extent. That yes, they were using it as a serious plot point within the story, but that the show didn't ask you to think that that wasn't silly, right?
Right.
I felt like the show was asking you to take skinhead Connor seriously, and I was like, I can't do that. I cannot do that. It is too ridiculous. You've done nothing to earn this. It's come out of nowhere.
I totally agree with you. I thought it was a weird turn for him, and it was honestly hard to watch.
What? Well, because it was so stupid. You could get there. I can totally buy into a version of Connor that is acting extremely Lex-like, but do it over time. Have him every episode acting a little bit colder, right? A little bit more like Lex, and you're seeing this, and then you have the traumatic event. And then you see him go full Lex mode and you're like, oh, that makes sense, because we've been seeing him kind of slipping throughout the season. Right? Especially when they built, I feel like the show did a little bit of that. They had him go and try and talk to Lex and figure out who Lex was. And you could have done a version where that interaction with him starts a slow backslide into him being more like the Lex part of his genes. But they didn't do that. They had him interact with that, and he's still wholesome Connor. And then all of a sudden, it's like if it's a graph, it's at 100%, and then it just shoots straight line down into zero. It's 0% Superman at the end. Like, there's no transition. It's just 100, zero.
Apparently, when he has hair, he's more Superman-like. But when you shave him bald, he becomes Lex Luthor.
It was very silly, which is a shame, Drew, because I really thought the rest of the episode was very strong.
Oh, yeah, I did, too.
I'm almost positive. I can't remember the name. He definitely dropped Vixen's name, the guy. So there was the guy that talked to Garfield.
Right. Now, the two names he dropped was Buddy Baker, which is, I looked these up. Buddy Baker, which is Animal Man.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was pretty sure it was Animal Man.
Mary McCabe is Vixen. So I looked them both up to make sure because the thing they didn't do was indicate who these names were. If you weren't a comics fan of these two characters, you wouldn't freaking know who they were from Adam.
Right, but I think that's kind of the point. I don't know that we were necessarily, like, I think that was just there for people that do know. Because we remember what was really cool when he dropped Buddy Baker's name. I was like, oh, that's Animal Man. Because we had speculated. They're like, they seem to be leaning into the idea of the Red, who Beast Boy in the comics has been shown to have a connection to, which totally makes sense. And I was like, man, they could do something with Animal Man there if they wanted to. And then when they dropped both Vixen and Animal Man's name, I was like, oh. I don't think we'll see either of those, but that would be, it would be really cool to see an Animal Man adaptation of some kind.
Yeah,
I feel be. Like it'd be more likely to see him in Doom Patrol, if I'm being honest, but either way, I would love to see Animal Man somehow.
The other thing I liked was we saw Gar chase back after the dude, and when he gets his attention, the dude's like, why are you bothering me? Because whatever spoke through him was gone.
I'm trying to figure out who that could be, Drew. Who's the other – who's? Because he named the – like we've. I feel like we saw the three biggest people connected to the Red, or like the – like we got – Beast Boy, right? And then he name dropped Vixen and Animal Man. And I was like, who would he be? I won't lie, Drew. Initially, when he was talking to Gar, I thought that might be their version of Animal Man. Just like, again, not like literally the Buddy Baker animal, you know what I mean? Like their version of a guy that also taps into animal powers. And then obviously it wasn't. So I'm like, I don't know who's the other. I feel like there's got to be some other obvious person I'm not thinking of.
Yeah, I don't know who it'd be.
I'm fascinated. I feel like we're going to get some sort of... And maybe it's nobody. Maybe it's somebody that the show made up. But I am much... That interaction was a small part of the episode, but it really piqued my interest quite a bit. I'm like, ooh, what's going on with that?
I thought it was a really, really good episode of Titans.
And now apparently we're not going to watch more.
I know. I'm like, really? They did stop it. They did stop it at a good point, though.
Very logical stopping point. I will say it is a very, very clear halfway point in the story.
But it's so odd why they would just cut the season in half like that.
Yeah. Especially for a streaming service show. That's very, like you said, it's done. Titans is done. So I, not like canceled, but like it's filmed. There's no reason not to put the episodes out, so that's kind of interesting. The other thing that killed me, Drew, and it's killing me more knowing now that we have this hiatus to deal with, is that I thought for sure the episode was going to end with Sebastian coming back out of the blood as Brother Blood, you know, some sort of costume change going on and look change with that.
Yeah, I was expecting the same thing too.
It was effective, right? It was more effective to end on the clip. Like, you see him go under the blood. There's a very clear, you know, unspoken, like, there's definitely a transformation going on under there, but you're not going to see it yet. I was like, oh, that's cruel. That's okay. I'll watch it next week. And then there wasn't the next one up, and I was like, wait, what?
Yes.
That's brutal, Drew. I really wanted to see what their Brother Blood looked like.
Yeah, now we don't even know when Titans is coming back. They haven't even announced it. It's so weird. That's why when I started thinking about it, I'm like, are they going to drop the second half of the season on their new streaming platform just to try to get, you know, people to sign up for the new one?
Wouldn't shock me.
Because I don't...
You want to have current things going on the streaming service, so I could get that. I could see that.
So, weird. Now we're only going to be doing Doom Patrol.
There are worse shows to only be doing one show review of.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to lie, Drew. I'm not complaining.
That's going to be coming after Doom Patrol. Because about around the time we get done finished reviewing it should be when Flash's final season starts. So.
Well, that's why I'm enjoying this golden era we're in right now.
All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week, Doom Patrol, Season 4, Episode 2, Butt Patrol. The Doom Patrol decide that they must do whatever they can to prevent Asspocalypse or Crisis on Infinite Ass. The first order of business, a new team leader. Rita is voted out and Rouge is voted in. Rita has discovered the source of the zombie butt, Darren Jones. He escaped that night at the old barn when one of them bit him. The plan is to find him and exterminate him before he infects anyone else. Rouge tells the team she wants to leave in an hour. Rouge pulls Cliff aside and states she only needs him for this mission. 2017, the Ant Farm. Dr. Margaret Yu is brought in to establish communication to assert control and order over their newest weapon, the butts. The weapons must obey their commands. Victor tells Jane that Rouge and Cliff left on a mission without them. Victor has intercepted a transmission report from the Bureau of Normalcy. There is another zombie butt out there. If he hurries, Victor can still intercept it. Jane goes with him. Cliff and Rouge confront Darren Jones, who states that after becoming a zombie, he knew the only cure was to consume living flesh, human brains. But as a God-fearing agent of normalcy, he could not allow himself to do that. He's refusing to be a zombie. Instead, Darren has decided to live off the land, isolating himself from tempting brains. Darren knew this day would come eventually and asked Cliff to put him down. Darren only has one request, and that is to make good use of his tomato crop. When Rouge removes Cliff's helmet, Darren goes brains crazy. Cliff kills him. Mission accomplished. Except Cliff's mitt fell off during the battle. Victor poses as Agent Wolfman while Jane poses as Agent Perez from the Bureau of Normalcy. And they meet up with Agent Butt Hunter. They learn that a year ago, the Bureau of Normalcy lost an entire horde of killer butts. He was hired to round them up. Most of them have been recovered, but some have ended up dead. When he came upon the final target, it was different, sickly. Victor and Jane gain possession of the zombie butt. 2019. When the butts are loose on the ant farm, Dr. Yu is wearing headphones and is unaware. When she realizes that exterminators are coming, Dr. Yu saves Nicholas the Butt Monster, who is hiding. Back at the Doom Patrol mansion, Cliff is given the chore of killing the zombie butt. Jane watches a video of Victor interviewing Kay. Kay doesn't know what the purpose of the underground is anymore. At one time, their purpose was to protect her, but Kay states something has changed, and she doesn't know if she needs them for that purpose anymore. She thinks they need a new purpose, otherwise they will be lost. Present day, Dr. Yu returns home and gives her butt Nicholas a bowl of cereal.
God, Drew, I love this show. What other show can you get singing butts doing a musical number?
I know, that was so freaking hilarious.
It was magical, Drew. And then the guy makes them mad by hitting the glass. Sir, we don't anger the butts. We don't anger the butts. Oh, it's just so good. It's so good, Drew. It's so funny. The thing that makes the show so good, Drew, is that it just goes for it, right? Like, whatever, you know, other comedy shows come up, writers come up with these like crazy things, and sometimes, like, I'm sure a lot of them go for whatever idea they come up with, but you know that there's times where they're like, ah, that's a little too weird, right? Like, we can't actually do that, but that would be really funny. I don't feel like anybody ever says that on Doom Patrol. Like, whatever ridiculous crazy idea, they're like, yeah, let's do it, why not?
They just go all in.
Yeah, like, what if we had butts doing a musical number, and then we had a zombie version of those butts cause a worldwide apocalypse. God, it's so good. It's so good. And yet it also still manages to balance that out with all of these, you know, the inner demons that all these characters deal with and the interpersonal relationships. Like we see Jane kind of realizing that maybe Kate doesn't need her to be the guardian anymore and to figure out who she is on her own. And that's going to be interesting to see. We see Cyborg's trying to be just a normal guy and enjoy his normal life for the first time in decades. Really good stuff. Really good stuff, Drew. I love this show.
Yeah. The other thing I want to point out, we got Rita, who's, you know, being the team leader has been her sole purpose and gave her, you know, it's gotten her away from wanting to be the actress anymore. And that's taken away from her. She doesn't know what to do when she's not leading. She wants to, you know, stay behind. So you have that going on. You have Cliff, whose mitt accidentally came off during the battle. What's the first thing he ends up touching? Him killing the dude. And as we see when he tries to kill that zombie, but at the end, he has problems doing it. It's affected him mentally. Interesting stuff. We continue to see the Doom Patrol struggle through their personal things.
Drew, one thing that I had a hard time accepting was them bringing the frozen butt back to the house and then just leaving Cliff alone with it, assuming that he's going to do the right thing and kill it. That's a big ask of who is by far the least responsible member of that team, which is made up of wildly irresponsible people.
That's so true.
You know what I mean? Like, I was like, look, I get it. It's set up for the scene where he's sort of talking out the very understandable emotions that he's feeling. Like, the first thing that he felt with his hand was caving a guy's skull in. Like, I get it, Drew, right? But I was like, this only happened because everybody was like, hey, here's the thing that as far as we know, as far as we're aware, is going to cause the terrible, terrible future that we saw. Here, Cliff, we're all going to collectively walk away and you deal with it. What could go wrong? And the show didn't seem to play that for laughs, right? Like, I feel like sometimes the show does stuff like that where it's like, well, that's silly, but the show knows it's silly. I feel like the show just sort of asked you to buy that made sense.
But also points out how irresponsible they are. You know, Cliff's going to take care of it. Let's go do our own thing. You know, a lot of times they do that kind of thing, though.
I agree, but I feel like this episode specifically, I feel like they really drove home the point that they cared. They all collectively cared enough about preventing the future that they saw to actually see this one through and do what was necessary for a change and not just be the Doom Patrol like usual. A minor point. I love the episode. I don't want to make it sound like this ruined any level of enjoyment. I just, that one scene, I was kind of like, I don't buy that they would walk away here. All of them. I could buy some of them walking away. Cliff walking away would make sense, except he's the one that's supposed to kill it.
Yes, and we don't see him actually kill it, so...
That's what I'm saying, Drew. That's what I'm saying. Like, now, to be fair, they do show Madame Rouge hiding behind the staircase, so, like, she is there, and so she is actually aware of what's going on, but... Nonetheless, at least for a moment, there seems to be it where there is no one that really is going to know one way or the other what Cliff does or does not do with the butt.
Yes. The other thing is we have that Nicholas butt out there also.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. So what seems to be is that seems to be the one that actually is going to cause all the problems in the future. And maybe Doom Patrol causes it by becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy that they just left it all alone, that this Nicholas butt would be fine, right? He's just singing and enjoying his cereal, as all butts do. So, you know what I mean? Like, I do wonder if one of the things the show is doing is it's sort of, like, in an attempt to prevent the future that they saw, they're the ones that actually make it happen.
That's very possible. It's even possible that Nicholas butt doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just red herring. It's going to be because Cliff doesn't kill the zombie, but they already have. It'll be interesting to see what happens next issue, or next episode.
How many of Doom Patrol do we get before hiatus? 5?
Okay, there's 6 episodes. And this is episode number 2, so we got 4 more before it goes on hiatus.
Hey, that's one more than I thought we were going to get, so glass half full. Look at me, the optimist, Drew. That's going to, the hiatus for Doom Patrol is going to bother me more than the hiatus for Titans, if I'm being honest. Because, like, I like Titans, but I don't like, need to watch it. Like, Doom Patrol, I'm always chomping at the bit to watch the next episode.
So, yeah, it's not going to be fun. Let's put it that way. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, I wanted to, so I mentioned when we were talking about the Jon Stewart book, that they've done other, like, off-the-beaten-path stories with him before, and this one is certainly more of a Green Lantern story, but this would have been when you were buying comics. There was a series that ran in the early 90s called Green Lantern Mosaic, and Jon Stewart was the lead character in that. And the basic premise is that one of the rogue guardians, Appa Aliapsa, has been going around taking cities from different worlds and then bringing them back to Oa to make this mosaic world, like this patchwork world of different people. And Hal and John and a couple other Green Lanterns overthrow Appa, but then the other guardians decide, wait, we should let this see this world through, and let's not return these people. Let's just have this, keep the mosaic world. And John, you're in charge. And so that's kind of what the story is. It started in 1992. It ran for 18 issues before it was canceled. At one point, he's named the first human guardian. So again, there's some precedent to John being, you know, a different level of authority in Green Lantern and being in charge of this kind of different world and different story from what the rest of Green Lantern is doing. And I feel like in some ways, this Jon Stewart story that we're getting now feels like an evolution of that, of this mosaic story. But important to note is that we're still also doing Green Lantern at the same time. And so if you didn't care for the mosaic story, you could still read other Green Lantern stuff. So I just wanted to mention, because I actually own some random issues of this that, like, you know, like people, like my mom or whatever, somebody would go through a flea market and be like, oh, Cletus likes Green Lantern. I feel like I've acquired multiple mosaic issues from this. It's not bad. I enjoy it. It's also, spoiler alert for a character that is alive again, but Chip dies in Mosaic. And so it's somewhat famous for that.
I remember Green Lantern Mosaic. I honestly can't remember if I have it as individual issues or a collected version of it. I do remember it, though. And I read it back then. I haven't revisited it since then. Oh, man, I can't remember how I have it, though. I'd have to dig through my stuff to find it. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout out about Earth Station DCU Classics Episode H, which is now available exclusively on the ESO Patreon. Kevin Eldridge and I travel back to the year 1985. I take a look at the now classic Superman annual for The Man Who Has Everything, which was written by Alan Moore and illustrated by Dave Gibbons, same guys who did The Watchmen. And Kevin reviews the Red Tornado 4-issue miniseries that came out that year by Kurt Busiek and illustrated by Carmine Infantino. So if you're a member of Patreon or been thinking about it, you can join on there and take a listen. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming out next week, we've got Danger Street, Batgirls, I Am Batman, Superman Son of Kal-El, Wonder Woman, Dark Crisis Big Bang, and our DC television show Doom Patrol. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Comic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.